intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the broadest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Last week, we promised that in our next show, that's today, that I would ask Dr. Gary Parker about Dr. Philip Johnson, who is the father of the modern intelligent design movement, and he's passed away. So, Gary Parker, welcome back to Real Science Radio.
Oh, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be back. We both had fun last time, didn't we?
Yes. What an honor it is. You're one of the fathers of the modern creation movement. I think the title goes to Henry Morris.
Yes.
Dwayne Gish.
Yes.
But you were there from the early years developing resources that now have trained literally a million people, more than a million, millions, to think about the creator God who inspired the books of Genesis and Exodus,
yes,
and then the whole Bible.
Yes. And they were the ones that I learned from, Morris and Gish and the others at ICR and AIG.
And Dr. Parker, you were not only a scientist, but you were an evolutionist and an atheist and a recipient of a fellowship award from the National Science Foundation. This is a big deal. And when you came to the creation movement, you brought so much encouragement to so many people, including my longtime co-host, Fred Williams, who's kicking himself because he can't be here right now to meet you. But in our previous show, we mentioned that Dr. Philip Johnson, who's not a biologist, he's not a scientist. Well, he's just passed away, but he was a law professor at Berkeley. And he wrote a book, Darwin on Trial, and that really began not the creation movement, that was already going strong, but it began something called the intelligent design movement. And so I wanted to ask you, had you ever interacted with Philip Johnson? Were you guys aware of each other?
Yes, probably not as much as either one of us would like, but I was just a wonderful person. And my first introduction to him, I was asked to critique what he said. So that's, you would think that might not be the ideal way to meet.
To meet someone.
Yes. But he was speaking at a Christian college near where I was teaching on Darwin on Trial. And just with a lawyer's sharp eye, does the claim and the evidence match?
Mm.
And he was saying if you looked at the evidence, Darwin's whole thesis would be thrown out of court as a frivolous suit.
Wow.
Could never even get to the...
Right.
And he gave then a lecture to a group on evidences of intelligent design. And of course, intelligent design is plan, purpose, special creative acts. It's matter shaped and molded with a plan that gives it a purpose. It's not standing around waiting for dust to spring to life and, and the life to branch out into everything else. And he gave numerous reasons why, you know, dust can't do what God could do with dust.
Wow.
And I was quite impressed. You know, it's very, very good. But I was asked to critique. And, of course, I said lots of complimentary things. And Philip Johnson was still in the audience. And I said, but, you know, I've been an evolutionist for a lot of years, too. And thinking about how I would have responded then, that was a big help to me in debates. I already knew what my opponent was going to say because I used to say
Yeah, right. What a great point.
And I said, you know, an evolutionist might say, well, you know, this creator of yours, great job he did with the AIDS virus. Awesome. You know, that's really sweeping the world. What a spectacular creation that was.
And, wow. In other words, with disease, because there are viruses and pathogens, deadly bacteria that you might point to them and say, look how well they're designed. But if you're not coming from a biblical perspective, it's real hard to explain what is broken.
Yes. And that was the idea, that intelligent design still can survive. Because when you look at things like viruses and like disease organisms, You see evidence that they have been created, but something broke.
Yeah, they're broken.
And in the biblical model, you have God's perfect creation ruined by man's sin. That's where death, disease, decline come from. Now, they don't want to bring that point out.
Yeah, the intelligent design movement is like a secular creation movement. Uh-huh. Although some of their scientists are agnostic or even atheist and of different religious persuasions. So it really is not a hidden creation movement. It's not.
Right.
It really is not that.
It's not that.
It is a group of scientists who've come together to say, look at the evidence for design. But when you understand reality from a biblical perspective, we see that sin and rebellion against the designer, against the creator, is why the creator is hands off and disease and natural disaster is happening. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you have a creator who, if he had no moral component, if he's not God, you make something, it doesn't work, well, then fix it. You know, but history is headed toward Judgment Day.
Yes. But I had a personal encounter with this in Melbourne in Australia one time. The Australian evolutionists were really good at heckling, but it was, you know, turning against them. And so they decided to act like gentlemen. They were all lined up on the front row. And of course, I give my lecture on evidence for creation, pointing to God, evidence for mutation and struggle for life, pointing to sin, and the fossils pointing to the Great Flood. And then the first evolutionist says, well, you know, that was interesting what you had to say about creation and DNA and plan and purpose. And I said, but, you know, what about viruses? And so I kind of surprised him. I said, you know, viruses show ample evidence of being created. And the ones that have a little, look like a lunar landing module, got DNA and RNA and a hypodermic injection mechanism, little feelers to attach. I said, there's no doubt about it. They are designed. The same things that recognize design.
Absolutely, right.
But I said, what happens when mutations, when chance enters in? And the struggle for survival enters in, which was absent from God's perfect creation. Well, now those feelers can attach to the wrong place, inject DNA. It doesn't do what it was designed to do. Viruses actually serve as genetic reservoirs and genetic carriers for bacteria.
Yeah, horizontal gene transfer, in other words, where in order to respond to rapid changes in the environment, you might need these molecular organisms to share and modify their genomes, and that happens.
And now we're copying what God did. We're using viruses, coding them to put in anti-cancer drugs into cancer cells, not just in the body where they make you sick all over.
Right.
But target.
Like with CRISPR-Cas9.
Yes.
Yeah, the ability to. In fact, they thought that this sequence in a virus was junk. They thought everything was junk for the most part for decades. Uh-huh. I had a debate about that with the Dr. Eugenie Scott.
Remember, I know her very well.
You did. Yeah, she's a troublemaker. Physical anthropologist, one of the world's leading anti-creationists.
Yes.
Sadly, I hope she comes to the Lord. She's retired now. But she said on my show, and we had an hour together, I asked Eugenie, give me the best evidence for evolution. What do you think is the best evidence? I asked her repeatedly. Finally, she said, junk DNA.
Really?
And that was back in the 90s. Now, fast forward to the ENCODE project, and they're realizing that this DNA is overwhelmingly functional.
This is Randy Galusa, a close friend of mine and someone you know very well. I believe he's been on the show before.
Well, Randy and I have never done a show together, but we are friends. And I think he's one of the most brilliant thinkers in the creation movement.
Oh, I think so, too. And it's my privilege and pleasure and thrill to work with him. And my role in working with Randy is to help translate what he's saying so that more people understand and appreciate it. He works, you know, at such a nice research level. Now, he also is very good communicator.
Oh, he sure is,
At the general level. But this way, he can do the epigenetic research, that junk DNA, turned out to be regulatory DNA.
Yes.
That can turn on and off other DNA.
Millions
and not just,
of pieces of regulatory code that's really calling the shots. Uh-huh. It's almost like the protein that's being made by the DNA. DNA makes RNA, makes proteins. It's almost like the proteins are the rudimentary building blocks. They're more like the simpler things.
Yes.
It's the regulation, the intelligence designed into, okay, now what do you do with these 20,000 building blocks? Here's what you do with them. You build a giraffe, or you build a baby, a little boy or a girl. So Randy's work, it's looking, I think, really beyond what the creation movement had been, the status quo, into the next generation of biology and molecular biology. Yeah.
And I think so, too. And it's going to be a real blessing. And he's captured the imagination of real scientists. You know, the common thing is, well, scientists revolution. Very few of them care about it. Mm. They're scientists. They want to know how something works. And we talk about adaptation and, of course, biblically, the multiply after kind and multiply and fill. And so, yeah, how do you do that? Millions of years of struggle and death? Well, that's a horrible way to go at it.
Right.
And so,
to fill the earth
epigenetic,
with life.
We have variation in kind of alleles, like with a dark and light skin color. A couple of genes will give you a lot of variation. But the regulatory genes help determine the amount of a trait that expresses, and they have molecular pathways. You know, evolutionists just tell survival stories.
Mm.
Scientists are looking, how do they know? How to respond? How did they recognize that stimulus? Well, they're actually sensor pathways, groups of protein molecules conveying a message, and then their logic
their
connecting
feedback
systems.
Loops, the communication. If you create a chart of the communication pathways within a cell,
oh boy.
And you want to put it on your wall in your office, the first thing you need is a bigger office.
Yes, that's a good way to say it.
Because it's the most brilliant and complex, and it's like trying to map a major metropolitan city and how everything interacts.
Yes.
And the communication pathways and the distribution channels and the manufacturing plants and the energy plants. Mm-hmm. And each thing that you look at, it's not as though if you're a reductionist, look at the molecules and then you figure it out. No, it's like it's brilliance all the way down.
Yes.
Yes. And so Randy's work, one of the things he's done, and I think he got quite a few creation scientists annoyed with him when he started, but I think he's winning them over.
He won me over in 10 minutes.
Oh, really? Well, that's awesome, Dr. Parker. We're speaking to Dr. Gary Parker, the author of many fabulous books, including Creation Facts of Life. We're going to link to that book, one of your many, from today's show summary, Dr. Parker, just to let you know.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a readable summary across the board of the evidence for God's creation of man's sin, the effect on the Genesis flood, pointing to final salvation in Christ, looking at all the evidence evolutionists use in the context
that we really get
from reading God's Word.
Creation Facts of Life. Okay. So your now associate, Randy Galuza, when he started, I think he was annoying some creation scientists because he was saying that we give way too much credit to natural selection. We are taking people's focus off of the organism that God designed with built-in ability to adapt almost immediately to changing pressures. And we're letting the Darwinian story, like let's say the cave, the underwater cave, and fish go blind, and then they could use their resources more efficiently. It's like giving credit to the cave instead of to the organism that was designed to be adaptive.
Yes, and I did that. It's so embarrassing that, you know, that, well, if they got in the cave, they didn't need their eyes. So, you know, over the generations,
natural selection would.
And they didn't change into something else. At least I didn't go that far.
Yeah, right. They're still a fish.
But what the epigeneticists have discovered, if you, of course, take a blind fish like that back out of the light, well, it's still blind. That's not going to work. But they didn't lose those genes for eyes and all those connections. They lost the activation because they
didn't need it. The regulatory genes.
But when they go back out into the light, they regenerate the whole set. Now, sometimes it does take two or three generations to get it all back together again, but it wasn't lost. And sometimes I'll use an example with my students. I'm going to ask you, calculate how long you think it'd take to change an animal that had short, thin, brown hair and a little, you know, just a thin layer of skin, hardly any fat beneath it, you know, just bare pads on its feet. And how long would it take to change that in an animal that had real fluffy, thick fur, you know, a thick pad of fat under its skin and hair on its feet and all that? How many millions of years would that take? You know, and well, of course, a month.
A month? Okay.
Yeah, what I just described was the change of the summer Arctic fox to the winter Arctic fox.
Oh, wow.
And then it changes back again the next season.
Yeah, what a fabulous point.
Same DNA.
Yeah.
Remarkably
responding,
different adaptations.
Yes. And this is epigenetics.
This is epigenetics.
I think epigenetics.
Same genes, different response, different regulation, different amounts of the same traits.
I think that's a term. Of course, you know, you could just Google it, get the definition. But I think it's a term that hasn't quite found its home yet, because there are so many influences that affect the genome, and you don't have to wait 80 generations or 2,000 generations. We're talking about programmed in responses where adaptation is happening not by random chance, but because it was designed to happen.
Yeah, plan and purpose. And by the way, I have to warn people about reading definitions in dictionaries. Mm. The definitions presume evolution, and evolution is built in the answer. If you look up adaptation, natural selection's way of designing organisms to fit their environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really have to look sometimes deeper than even a science dictionary can tell you.
Sure.
But the truth is what people recognize all the time. Mm-hmm. Things designed to accomplish a purpose. Organisms don't just wind up someplace and either live or die. If it's uncomfortable, they look for another place. Okay, so they were designed to multiply and fill, to spread out, to look for different environments, and they have enough genetic variability, they can move into different environments. Same organism, but they can live where it's cold, they can live where it's hot, they can live where it switches from hot to cold.
Mm.
No struggle, no death. No accidental mutations.
In these organisms that have been designed to adapt and to survive in extremes.
Yes. And you can unravel it. You don't guess. You don't say, well, I think that's how they did it. No. You say, this is the receptor molecule. This is a logic connection system we've identified. It consists of these proteins. And you give names. And here's the effector unit that enables this to happen.
Mm.
And so it's engineered adaptability. You were telling me that your co-host, Fred, is an engineer, and engineers would have a hard time falling for evolution.
Oh, yeah. And Fred makes that point, and he laughs. He has such a great sense of humor, and he thinks if ever we were going to take evolutionary principles to work, we'd all be fired, because it's not going to work. In fact, scientists for the Soviet Union, they tried their evolutionary experiments to improve crops by random mutation, and they didn't want to give up. They spent decades and millions of dollars while people are starving, and they wasted all that time thinking evolution was going to make better crops.
There was an article written once called The Lysenko Affair.
Yes,
Lysenko,
that's exactly what I'm referring to,
He was a commissar of genetics in Russia and believed, like Darwin, that the environment you get it changes the organism. And so instead of trying to develop hybrid seed to grow in different environments, he kept trying to mess with the environment to change the plant. And up until the mid-1970s, and of course, then the Russian premier comes over here. How do you guys get to grow all these crops?
Yeah, we have the cornucopia here, and they're dying in starvation, literally, tragically. And a lot of it was intentional, apparently. And eventually, the Soviets, they gave up because it was a complete failure.
Yes.
Yeah. So the predictions of the evolutionists have failed. Dobzhansky. Remember Theodosius Dobzhansky?
Oh, yes, one of my favorites, evolutionists.
Yeah, he wrote his iconic paper, Nothing in Biology Makes Sense Except in the Light of Evolution. And I had the honor, Dr. Parker, 40 years later, publishing an analysis of his paper in the CRSQ, in the quarterly.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and he made three predictions in his paper, that iconic paper. All three failed. Complete failure. Mm-hmm. And that's typical of evolutionary predictions. They fail because they're not based on a valid understanding of biology.
Oh, that's exactly right. Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, getting that published as a non-scientist, that was a challenge. But
that's excellent.
But that worked out. But with Randy Galuz's insights that he's taught to so many others now, the organism's ability to have foresight, to look ahead of time at what possibly may happen and then prepare for that.
Yeah. It's the creator's foresight, but
well,
he
right.
built it into yes. the organism so they can look for the proper area and they can move into it. They can adjust the traits that make them a certain kind.
Mm-hmm.
It's stunning. And it works.
Dr. Lee Spetner, I don't know if you recall that name.
Yes, I do.
He's a scientist. Mm-hmm. He lives in Israel. Lord willing, he'll be on the show just in a week or two.
Oh,
he wrote a couple books now, his first one, Not by Chance. Mm-hmm. And he talked about this idea way back when, that it's not random, the adaptations that are happening. And he wrote about a species of fish in a lake where there are no predators, and they lay fewer eggs, and they take a long time to mature. He said, then you introduce a predator, and the same fish, same species, lays many more eggs, and they mature much more quickly.
Oh.
And so there's the influence. That's an example of epigenetics.
Yes.
And you don't have to wait 800 generations for a mistake to produce more eggs. It's programmed in response.
Yes, and that's just stunning. We are now in the post-Darwinian era. Science has absolutely no use for anything that Darwin said.
Mm.
What natural selection is going to survive, not as a science word, but as a worship word.
Wow.
That's what it was intended as the first place. Nature selection.
A religious doctrine.
Religious doctrine. Nature selection was to replace God's creation. That was the idea. And by focusing, they tried to focus on nature. See, philosophers had the idea for years, but nobody paid any attention.
Mm.
But now, science began to bless man with lots of toys and cures for diseases. And well, let's face it, they've made life a lot easier for a lot of people. But there's no moral responsibility. And so he who dies with the most toys wins, et cetera, you know, that kind of thing. And it's winners and losers, not right and wrong, not good or bad. And unfortunately, that's an easy sell and a satanic seduction. And so I was going to title my preface for Randy's book, Natural Selection, and a sales pitch, Satanic Seduction or Rock Solid Science.
Wow.
And the one that's not is rock solid science. It's just mythology, parading. Yeah, it's humanism in a lab coat. They try to gain some respect for it it doesn't really deserve.
A member of the Academy, the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, the late Dr. Philip Skell, you keep saying, and I think evolutionists listening to this show will cringe every time you say it, that evolution is a failed theory. It's being discarded. There's no use for it. Well, Dr. Philip Skell was, again, a member of the National Academy of Sciences, and he said that as a member, he asked 70 eminent researchers if they would have done their work differently. And these are people who had won Nobel Prizes for their discoveries in the life sciences. He said, would you have done your work differently if you had thought Darwin's theory was wrong? Now, that's an interesting question.
Oh, okay.
He said, of all 70, and these are at his level, he said, every single one, after thinking about it, said, no, my research would have been the same whether Darwin's theory was right or wrong. And that proves that Dobzhansky was completely incorrect when he said nothing in biology makes sense except in the light of evolution. You don't need Darwin's theory of evolution to explain the astounding discoveries that have been made, including by Crick and the DNA molecule.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And a quote on Dobzhansky's book one time, and it contained a fascinating misprint. Mm. And the citation read, "Nothing in biology makes sense in the light of evolution."
That is so funny. That reminds me of the Wicked Bible. Did you hear about that in the 1600s? The King James Bible was published, and they made an error in the Ten Commandments, Exodus 20. And it literally said, and I pulled this at the library in Oxford, at the Bodleian Library, it said, "Thou shalt commit adultery." Literally. And what was interesting is that the whole world knew it was wrong. So there's something good about God's word. It's obvious, you know. But so, wow, that was a misprint with Dobzhansky. Interesting.
And, you know, the future, getting science back into the science classroom through epigenetics could be just revolutionary. Of all the, you know, debates I had over a 25-year period, you know, hundreds and hundreds of debates on five continents, the hardest thing about the debate, it was usually sponsored by a Christian group, was to find a scientist
who was willing to debate. In those early years, the debates were happening until the professors at leading universities, biology, paleontology, until they realized that they were doing very poorly in the debates. And so that at secular universities, you would have 800 people, 1,500 people in the audience, and they would applaud for the creationist.
Yes.
And that lasted for a while. And then that was a wonderful time for the creation movement. But they quickly realized, and people like Eugenie Scott put out the word and said, "We have to stop debating creationists."
Yeah, the last few debates I had, my opponent told me. Well, one was the University of New Brunswick in Canada. And he said, "I agreed to do this debate, and I got a call, not from Ottawa, from Washington, D.C. Don't debate, don't debate." The reason? It just makes the creationists look good.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah.
And they begin to cease debating.
Yeah.
And they don't want to hear it. It's that Romans 1:18, suppress the truth. Yeah. Don't let anybody hear about it.
Yeah. One of the fathers of plate tectonics, in fact, he's the man who coined the term seafloor spreading.
Oh.
He was set to debate a friend of mine who's Dr. Walt Brown. He used to work for Henry Morris.
I know him. Yes.
Yeah, from years ago. He was with the Midwest Center. He was the director. And he backed out of the debate. This was a major spread in the Arizona Republic, the state's biggest newspaper. And right before the debate, he backs out. And that was about the time, because Dr. Brown did many debates, Henry Morris, Dwayne Gish, Dr. Gary Parker. You guys were heroes to so many, because you would stand up there and you would give the scientific rebuttals and the actual evidence that the experts couldn't answer. What an exciting time, but that time is past now.
Yeah, I know. I miss it a lot.
Yeah.
But it was a smart move on the part of evolutionists. Because
smart from their evil perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Smarter would it be to humble themselves and acknowledge God.
That would be eternally smart.
Yes, that's right. But from their desire to get people to reject our Creator, then their tactics, they said, "Let's stop debating." And they have, and it is very hard to arrange a debate with a professor or a leading author.
Yeah, and even before they quit, you know, the problem to find one, they'd go to scientist after scientist. Well, you know, I had evolution in college, I guess it's true, but I'm a physiologist, I don't really use evolution. I'm an anatomist, I don't use it. I'm an ecologist, I don't, you know. They weren't using it in their classroom. And that was a big problem. It just didn't really happen. And right before the end of my college teaching career, I got a super textbook in ecology that was really research level. And I thought, boy, it's so good. I'm going to order this and use it anyway. And I got a few months later, I got a supplement in the mail this brilliant ecology textbook never mentioned evolution.
Wow.
And the evolutionists threatened to ban its publication, never adopt it for their classes. So he quick ran off a little thing about evolution that you could add to it.
Yeah.
Leninger's biochemistry book I used for years. Didn't mention the origin of life.
And it's the obligatory gloss that they have to put in order to be part of the club and to get published.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And what a shame. We did have a debate at the University of Denver. What a tragedy what's happened to education, Dr. Parker. The number one course at the University of Denver is remedial English. I got that from their school newspaper. And this is for Americans for whom English is their mother tongue. And they're taking remedial English. It really is a tragedy. Sometimes they call it DU. Sometimes I call it duh. But they had one of their students, you know, we get a student to debate the subject of evolution. And it's a neat event. And after the event, one of the attendees said to me, Bob, and we got this on video on our YouTube channel. It's just about 4 minutes long. He said, Bob, do you agree that if you have the first living organism, then Darwinism could explain all the life we have in the world? And I said, well, you've maybe studied ecology. Organisms have biological requirements that are supplied by other organisms. You know, no man is an island. An organism cannot supply all its own biological needs. And so it's ecosystems that are robust. You take one species and put it where, and it's going to survive how long with no other biological systems reinforcing its existence? And he said, I never thought of that.
I like that. Don't mind if I use it too.
No, not at all. We'll send you the link to the video. So, Dr. Parker, wow, you're one of the early experts who debated the evolutionist boldly and with great success. So it is an honor for me to talk to you all these years, me knowing about you, you having no idea Real Science Radio was out there. But
well, I'm sure glad I found out.
Well, it's just awesome. So thank you. We will link to your book again, Creation: Facts of Life. And as we always have done, we'll continue to follow your work. And please say hello to Randy.
Will do.
For Bob Enyard here at RSR. So thank you very much for being in studio.
A real pleasure. Glad to be with you, Bob.
All right. So that's Dr. Gary Parker, the scientist who reached my longtime co-host, Fred Williams. I'm so thankful for Dr. Parker's work. Christmas is coming up. At our store, we have wonderful, perfect Christmas presents. The science resources, especially. Some of the world's greatest videos and books. And then, of course, so many other resources. So if you'd like to check that out, rsr.org. Just click on the store, rsr.org. For Fred Williams and Real Science Radio, this is Bob Enyart. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.